Thank you so much for having me. It's such an honor to be here. It's actually 2:30 in the afternoon here in Northern Arizona. This is actually going to be the first reading I do from my new book, Nocturne. It'll be out in just a few weeks. So if you like what you hear, you can order it from Pavilion Poetry. Or you can pre-order it in advance. But yes, the poems I'm going to be reading are from my new collection coming out next month. And also, I am going to be coming out to Ireland in May to do some readings in Dublin and at the Cork Poetry Festival. So maybe I'll see some of you again. So thanks so much for having me. And I'll start off with dream number one. Dream number one, Liebestraum. The grand piano that fell from the sky did not make a sound as it crushed me, nor did I make a peep lying pinned under the weight of that beast. I felt a cold pedal in my stomach, a wooden leg stuck inside my back, metal strings pressing on my lungs. Around me were tuning pins, damaged hammers, broken keys. I lay very still, not feeling any pain, wondering if perhaps I'd already died. A medic arrives, says, "Blink twice if you're alive." I blink twice, and she slides a stretcher under me and the piano. It takes eight people to lift us up. The ER expands its doors to fit us through. Surgeon examines us and says, "Clearly, this piano must be removed." And I weep, recalling lying beneath it as a girl and listening to it practice Liebestraum over and over again. Yet even then, I somehow knew it only loved the sound of its own music. A medic wheels us into surgery, and I ask what will happen to the piano. "Too late, it's beyond repair," he says, inserting the needle and drug into my arms. I wake to beeping, the doctors saying, "You're lucky not to be paralyzed." But I don't thank the doctors for their work, nor do I count my blessings I'm alive. Instead, I grow enraged, I start to scream, "Why the hell did this piano fall on me?" And when no one answers, I just laugh, and looking up, I ask, "What else will crash down on me from God's big attic?" I was actually raised in a family of professional classical musicians, and my father is a pianist, my mother was a cellist, my sister, a soprano, and my brother, a violinist. And I write a lot about my family and about classical music. But in this collection in particular, I'm focused mostly on my father and his role as a pianist. And this next poem relates to that as well. Its title is Hands. After all, these were good hands, hands that could play Beethoven, Bach, Brahms, or Debussy. Even Rachmaninoff was easy for his hands. Some said he had genius hands, like the hands of Helfgott or Horowitz. Others loved his ragtime hands that made him rise from the bench, coattails flying as he wildly played. Somehow his hands had a way of making a room full of people stop talking, listen, and even weep. But these were not the hands we saw at home. At home, his hands were red and dry. His bony fingers cracked and bled and had to be wrapped in bandages. And at home, his hands were always practicing, arching, cracking like strange crustaceans, then scuttling up and down the piano keys. Perhaps then they were happy. But otherwise, his hands stayed hidden in the dark pockets of his slacks, avoiding his wife's hands, the hands of his own kids, and seeming only to ache for the applause of strangers' hands. Thank you. I guess I just got the applause of strangers' hands myself here. This next poem is called The Potato Plants. And this poem I started, I think, in 2008, and I finished it just in time to get the poem in my next collection, Nocturne, The Potato Plants. She kept the potatoes beneath the kitchen sink in a dank place I never dared to enter. But at fall planting time, Mother always sent me down into that moldy smelling cupboard where the potatoes looked soft, even shriveled. Some had grown white shoots in darkness. I'd rip open the netting, feeling the dirt on my hands as I gathered potatoes in a bowl, then met my mother out in the back garden. There I'd find her shadow moving quickly, raking the plot and using her strong hands to make rows and rows of divots in the earth. My small hands copied my mother's hands as one by one we buried potatoes together, while Mother confessed to me about her affair. If only he would leave that wife, she'd chuckle. Then, as the sun set over our backyard, she paused, turned to me and asked, "Don't you think I ought to leave your father?" I thought of Mother's question without a clue, that years later I'd find it impossible to sleep, or that our plants might one day sprout long legs and march crooked into my dreams at night. Father's piano thundered from the living room as I whispered to my mother, "Yes, leave him." Then we covered up the plot with layers of hay and in the darkness turned on all the sprinklers. This next poem is called Glacier Lilies, which we get a lot of in the mountains here in the Western United States, but I'm not sure do you guys get glacier lilies in Ireland? I don't know. Anyway, glacier lilies. I've heard they're everywhere in Montana, up in the mountains during the month of May, blooming through the wide open meadows, or spreading across an entire forest floor. For the animals, these flowers are like manna. After a long winter of nearly starving, black bears, mule deer, bumblebees appear and feast on their bright yellow petals, nourish on their rich inner bulbs. Although I have never seen these flowers, I've been reading about them now for years. Many times I've thought, I'll put on boots and hike high up into the mountains beyond where there are any marked trails. I'll likely have to pass through mud and ice, not to mention the wind this time of year. And what if I never find a glacier lily? The truth is, my winter has been long, and down where I live, there are no flowers. Yet I often think of them surviving, with long, elegant stems and delicate heads. What if I hiked up there and I found one, declaring itself in bold yellow petals and blooming on the edge of vanishing snow? Crow. Out of nowhere, a crow, all dressed up in classic villain attire and perched on my windowsill. "Well, hello, old crow, you're back. And after all these years, though looking at you closely, it seems you're not the same crow I know, not the bird I banished years ago. Your dark feathers seem shinier, your eyes even steelier than I remember as a teenager. Have you changed over the years, or is it me having turned 40? Nevertheless, I wonder what you want. Will you snatch me in your beak, cover me with your wings, and take me far, far away to where the sad people go, Crow? Or are you here just as a reminder that people like me are never quite free? Any given moment you might appear, just waiting in the early morning light. I've got three more poems to read, and two of them are set on the island of Key West. And this collection, Nocturne, that I have forthcoming is framed around dreams and the sort of technicolor world of life in Key West. So I'm excited to share these two Key West poems with you. The first one is Storm. Though the green coconuts seem safe in the trees, as winds pick up, I wonder, perhaps something is coming once again. Out on my deck, I'm still, just witnessing, as the sweet smell of plumeria flowers quickly shifts to the dark smell of rain. An anxious rooster hurries to shelter, the palms flap their monstrous fronds, and suddenly I'm afraid. Moving indoors, I watch the wind get wild, tip over a pink bike, and knock down a chair. Then the rain arrives, hard, deliberate, driving itself straight into the ground. I cower alone in the house. Ugh, not again. Now the outdoor couch cushions are sailing. A tree is yanked up, exposing its roots. I feel my small self lifting from the ground, but this time I don't resist. I let myself go to wherever it is I go in these storms, often not to return for months on end, knowing I'll come back to comb these streets for every single last fallen coconut. I'll wrap them in blankets, take them home, and nourish myself on their bitter milk. Evening on the porch. The rocking chair is rocking, though no one sits in it on this windless evening. And yet this rocking, rocking, back and forth as if a soul could somehow wish to be here once again on long, warm evenings with a tall glass of whiskey, reading and dozing off, or gazing longingly at the orange-pink sunset vanishing behind the trees, the last ripe mango dropping into darkness. Would they, if they could, return to this ruined porch just for one last look at evening in Key West? I love to write about horses. I'm not exactly sure why. I don't own any horses. I don't even ride horses. I just like them. My first collection is My Dark Horses, and it's got almost obsessive horse references in there. This collection is a little lighter on the horse references, but I was able to stick a couple horse poems in. So I'll just finish on this poem, Two Horses. And this one's set in the Macedon region of Australia, where I lived for a couple of years, about a decade ago. Two horses. There is no happiness like the happiness of horses. Just look at these two beauties moving through this landscape. Who has sent them to us, and from what other world? Today, I'm watching them meandering together beside the acacia trees. As they pause to eat grass, I see their long tails swaying in the sunlight, and I wonder what they know of life that I don't know. I've seen them stand for hours. It doesn't really matter whether the rains are coming or if that familiar darkness will soon be on its way. Seeing them here today under this vast Australian sky, it finally dawns upon me. My life is more than enough. To be alive is a blessing. Thank you.